This episode will cover the peripheral vascular system and lymphatic system assessment, following Chapter 21 of the Jarvis textbook. The peripheral vascular system is composed of arteries and veins. Arteries carry blood away from the heart, and the veins bring the blood back to the heart. The most important arteries to review are the brachial, radial, and ulnar arteries in the arms, and the femoral, popliteal, posterior tibial, and dorsalis pedis arteries in the legs. Recall that blood is moved through the arteries by the heart squeezing blood forward. It won't be as important to review specific veins, but here are some helpful details which will help us understand the assessment of the veins. 1. Blood is moved through the veins by the contraction of skeletal muscles and the act of breathing. 2. The veins have lots of one-way valves to make sure that in between breaths or in between muscle contractions, the blood doesn't flow away from the heart. 3. Veins are stretchier than arteries and can expand quite a bit. And 4. Veins lie closer to the skin surface than arteries. The arteries and veins are connected by capillary beds, and these capillary beds are constantly leaking fluid. This fluid that is neither inside a cell nor inside a blood vessel is called interstitial fluid. The main job of the lymphatic system is to pick up all this leaked interstitial fluid and bring it back into the veins. It does this by soaking up fluid all around the body and transporting it through lymphatic vessels. These many lymphatic vessels eventually converge into one of two collecting ducts, one on each side in the upper chest, which dump the fluid back into the peripheral vascular system into either the right or left subclavian vein. When this process is working as it should, in a healthy adult, about 1/4 of all the fluid in the body exists in the interstitial space. If the lymphatic system is overwhelmed by too much fluid leaking out into the interstitial space, this causes a buildup of fluid. This is called edema. But the lymphatic system doesn't just move fluid, it also filters that fluid through lymph nodes. These lymph nodes exist all throughout the body, but in specific parts of the body, they can be directly assessed by palpation. In the peripheries, this can be done in only two places: the epitrochlear lymph nodes near the elbow, and the inguinal lymph nodes near the groin. The most important change that occurs with age is arteriosclerosis, which is when the arteries become thicker and harder in older age. As a result, the arteries will become less effective, leading to less effective blood flow and weaker pulses to the extremities. Subjective data. As always, you will want to ask about any relevant personal or family history, any medications the patient may be taking, and any recent changes to the arms or legs, such as skin changes or swelling. You will want to also ask about risk factors for peripheral artery disease, such as obesity, lack of physical activity, hypertension, cholesterol, and smoking. It is also very important to know whether the patient has diabetes and how that diabetes is being treated. The damage that diabetes does throughout the body is primarily achieved by the damaging effect of high blood sugar on arteries. Anyone with diabetes should have their arteries examined extra closely. If a patient is complaining of leg pain, on top of the usual questions about pain, you should specifically ask about leg pain that occurs with activity, which is known as claudication. Claudication distance describes the distance a patient can walk before feeling the pain. Another question to ask for male clients is whether the pain is associated with erectile dysfunction. This may seem out of place, but because erections are achieved by an increase in blood pressure in the penis, knowing about erectile dysfunction can be helpful in understanding the underlying problem in some cases. Objective data in the upper extremities. As discussed in Chapter 13, you should inspect and palpate the skin over the arms and the hands, looking not only for lesions and feeling for temperature, but also checking capillary refill. There are three pulses to palpate in the arms: the brachial pulse, the radial pulse, and the ulnar pulse. The brachial pulse is located where the bicep ends at the elbow on the medial side. After passing the elbow, this artery forks into two smaller arteries, the radial artery and the ulnar artery. The radial artery is quite likely the one that you are most familiar with. Slide a couple fingers into the groove located on the thumb side of the anterior wrist, and you'll easily find it. The radial pulse is almost certainly the pulse you will assess the most frequently throughout your career, so I would recommend practicing on your friends, family, classmates, and any patient you encounter. This will help you to not only find it quickly, but you'll also become familiar with what a normal radial pulse feels like. When charting your assessment, you will be asked to decide whether your patient's pulse was weak, normal, or bounding. It is not very helpful for me or anyone else to describe in words what a normal pulse strength feels like. The best way to learn is to assess enough of them so that you can get a feel for it yourself. If a strong radial pulse is felt, there is typically no need to assess the brachial or ulnar pulse. This is because the radial artery gets all its blood from the brachial artery. So if the radial artery has strong arterial blood flow, the brachial artery must as well. Assessing the ulnar pulse is usually unnecessary, simply because the radial pulse right next to it is much easier to palpate. In many individuals, not being able to palpate it is actually a normal finding. But knowing where the ulnar pulse should be felt can be helpful, especially when performing the Allen test. The Allen test is a special assessment to test if the ulnar and radial arteries are both working. To understand the test, it is helpful to recall that the radial artery and the ulnar artery are redundant, meaning that either one of them can supply blood flow to the entire hand. But let's say that you were to stick a needle into a patient's radial artery to get an arterial blood sample, but then you accidentally cut the radial artery. As long as the ulnar artery is intact, the patient's hand will continue to be perfused by the ulnar artery. That is why the Allen test is performed before attempting arterial blood draws, to make sure that the ulnar artery is ready to take over in case the radial artery is cut in this way. To perform the test, apply pressure over the ulnar artery, found in the groove on the pinky end of the wrist, and simultaneously apply pressure over the radial pulse. Ask the patient to make a fist a few times until the hand turns pale. Then, release pressure from the ulnar artery while continuing to apply pressure to the radial artery and observe for the return of color to the hand. Conclude the arm assessment by palpating the epitrochlear lymph nodes, by grasping the person's hand as if shaking it, and then using your other hand to palpate the inside of the patient's elbow. The adult lymph node is generally not palpable in this area, so look carefully at figure 21.11 in your textbook to make sure you are doing this assessment correctly. Objective data of the lower extremities. Begin by inspecting the legs, looking for skin lesions, normal hair distribution, and any obvious asymmetry between the legs. If asymmetry is suspected, the calf circumference should be measured to get an accurate comparison. Look for bulging and twisted leg veins, which are known as varicose veins. Palpate for temperature along the legs, paying attention to any asymmetry or a temperature change as you move from the thighs to the feet. Gently squeeze the calf muscle for tenderness. There are four pulses to palpate in the legs: the femoral pulse, the popliteal pulse, the posterior tibial pulse, and dorsalis pedis pulse. The femoral pulse can be a bit difficult to locate for a couple reasons. 1, it can be uncomfortable to be touching someone so close to their genitals. 2, there isn't an obvious landmark to show you exactly where to press. And 3, the artery is quite deep, so if you're pressing too gently, you're not going to feel it. I recommend that you find this on yourself before practicing on others to get a sense of where to find it and how hard you need to press. To locate it, find your symphysis pubis by moving down from your belly button until you feel bone, then find your anterior superior iliac spine. The easiest way to find this is to put your hands on your hips, and that bony prominence that your index finger is probably resting on, that's your anterior superior iliac spine. Find the midpoint between those two landmarks, and that's where you'll feel the femoral pulse. As a side note, this area also happens to be where the inguinal lymph nodes are located, so as long as your fingers are there, no any palpable lymph nodes. Another side note is that if there is any abnormality in this pulse, the artery should be auscultated for a bruit. Moving on to the popliteal pulse, this pulse is located behind the knee. See figure 21.16 to see how you should be curling your fingers around the knee joint in order to palpate this pulse. The posterior tibial pulse is found posterior to the medial malleolus, and the dorsalis pedis pulse is found on top of the foot. For these pulses, especially the dorsalis pedis, press very gently to make sure that you are not accidentally obliterating the pulse with your fingers. As a side note, look ahead a couple pages in the book and you will see a section on the Doppler ultrasonic probe. The Doppler is a device that is able to pick up pulses much better than our fingers, and it is used in any situation when a pulse cannot be palpated. Because the dorsalis pedis pulse is the farthest from the heart, it is the one most likely to require a Doppler probe, as shown in figure 21.23, but any pulse that isn't palpable should be Doppler probed. Moving on from the pulses, you should also check for edema. To assess for edema in a particular area, first press down firmly on the skin for 5 seconds to push the interstitial fluid away from that area and then quickly release pressure. If an indentation remains, then this is called pitting edema. The skin over the tibia is an ideal place to assess for edema because normally there should only be a very thin layer of skin over the tibia, making any amount of edema easily visible. Edema should be graded on a scale of 1+ to 4+, in which 1+ is very mild pitting edema, where the indentation goes away almost immediately, and 4+ is severe pitting edema, where the indentation lasts for a long time and the leg is very obviously swollen. Lastly, if an arterial problem is suspected, it may be helpful to remove venous blood from the legs. This can be achieved by lifting the patient's legs and asking the patient to wag his or her feet. The legs should become slightly paler as the venous blood is drained away in even healthy individuals, but extreme pallor would be a sign of an arterial problem. If the patient then sits up with the lower legs dangling over the side of the bed, you can observe how long it takes for the blood to return. Conceptually, this is similar to assessing capillary refill on a nail bed. Abnormal findings. When assessing a problem with the peripheral vascular system, the two most helpful questions to ask is the problem arterial or venous, and is the problem acute or chronic? Peripheral artery disease is a chronic arterial problem. Because our muscles depend upon blood coming from the arteries during activity, it makes sense that the pain from an arterial condition would be worse during activity. Because it is a chronic condition, we would expect the pain to be chronic as well, and it is caused in part by a variety of long-term risk factors, such as obesity, hypertension, and smoking. Compartment syndrome, on the other hand, is an example of an acute arterial problem. It makes sense that an arterial problem would cause pulselessness and cool temperature to the affected extremity. As an acute condition, it makes sense that compartment syndrome is caused by things like a traumatic injury, and the clinical manifestations are isolated to the injured extremity. Chronic venous insufficiency is a venous problem, so it makes sense that it would cause bilateral varicose veins and edema. It also makes sense that the symptoms are best in the morning after a long period of laying down, which makes it easier for the blood to go through the veins since the blood doesn't have to go against gravity when lying down. As a chronic problem, the clinical manifestations are chronic in nature, and the risk of developing chronic venous insufficiency is affected by long-term risk factors such as having had multiple pregnancies or having worked a job that requires prolonged standing for a long period of time. Deep vein thrombophlebitis is an acute venous problem. As a venous problem, it causes edema. As an acute problem, the clinical manifestations will be unilateral, isolated to the affected leg, and will have a sudden onset. I just wanted to give a quick aside regarding symmetry to conclude this episode. When it comes to the physical examination, because so much of the human body is meant to be symmetric, looking for symmetry is one of the easiest and most powerful ways to look for irregularities. In order to best take advantage of this powerful tool, you should assess both sides of the body simultaneously whenever possible. For example, when assessing the pulses, always assess both sides simultaneously. The only exception to this is the popliteal pulse, and only because it takes two hands to assess each pulse. We just don't have enough hands to assess both sides simultaneously. Keep an eye out for the many ways in which you can use symmetry to your advantage throughout nursing school and as a nurse. And with that, I will conclude this episode on the peripheral vascular system and lymphatic system assessment. Thanks for listening.